Good afternoon, and welcome to Live with Pastor Al. Got a Bible question? Wondering what to make of current events? Call now at 888-677-9673. That's 888-677-9673. Now open your Bibles, open your minds, and join in the conversation with your host, Pastor Al Davis.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Live with Pastor Al. I'm your host, Pastor Al Davis. Be with you until 2 o'clock right here on AM 1220, The Word. And I hope you'll be able to stick with us here this afternoon. We got a special program and a special guest coming up in just a few moments. But check us out online at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. And if you go there, you can certainly learn more about me, more about the program. You can listen to our past programs there. We've got our Friday afternoon programs as well as our Sunday night programs. Of course, we're on every Friday from 1:30 to 2 and every Sunday night from 10 o'clock until midnight and right here on this station. So check out the livewithpastoral.com and you can listen to those programs, number of articles and things that we have there as well that I've put together. And you can link to our home church, Richfield Bible Baptist Church, where I am the pastor. And so I'll just leave all that information there. You have more information on the church there and certainly invite you to come out to our Bible study tonight at 7. And you can catch that information though at the end of the program. I want to get into our program here this afternoon. We have a special guest with us, and we have Sue Leibel, the Director of State Affairs and Midwest Regional Director for Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life. Sue Leibel, welcome to Live with Pastor Al.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you on with us today and glad to get some information and some updates about what's happening at the Supreme Court. But if you'd like to give a little background on yourself first before we jump into the topic, that'd be great.
Oh, sure. I hail from the state of Indiana, and my whole career has been lobbying and helping write public policy with elected officials and appointed officials in state government or in the legislature. For the past 15 years, I've done that for the pro-life issue. So I was blessed to work for a little while under a governor named Mike Pence here in Indiana. And I have had the pleasure of working with a lot of other folks that you've probably heard of too, but pro-life people, good, strong people. So we make a lot of fun of politics and stuff. It's very frustrating sometimes, but I want you to know I've met some of the most wonderful Christian pro-life people who are trying to make a difference. So I've done that for the past 15 years now for Susan B. Anthony. I go across the country and do the same.
Well, that's great. And, you know, and it's good to hear that you are meeting Christians in these various positions where they're out there making a difference, because that's certainly what the Lord wants us to do, to be salt and light. You know, I always tell our church, you can't be good salt if you stay in the shaker. You got to get out and to be involved, don't you? So
yes, I call this a mission field.
It sure is.
American politics is a mission field. We send missionaries to places that need the light, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'm here in Ohio, and I have opportunity to get down to the State House in Columbus periodically, doing different things, meeting with some of the elected officials, and I've given testimony on some issues and bills before the House and the Senate down there. So it's good to see people who are out there and getting involved. And we certainly have a cause to get involved in. We're talking about today because June 13th, Thursday, June 13th, the Supreme Court made a decision in the bill where the pro-life doctors had challenged the Food and Drug Administration. And what happened there? I'll let you fill us in on that.
Sure. Well, just a quick review. Mm-hmm. In the year 2000, the FDA approved these high-risk abortion drugs for use in the United States. But they did so by putting some specific safety standards in place, some extra rules about using these drugs. And they required doctors to provide ongoing care to women and girls using those drugs, including an in-person visit to check for ectopic pregnancies or pre-existing conditions, checking for severe bleeding, life-threatening. Women can go septic very quickly.
Yes.
If something goes wrong. So since its initial approval in 2000, though, the FDA has removed nearly every safety standard it once said was essential for women's health and safety. So by eliminating, for example, the requirement that doctors have to provide care in person, the FDA left young girls to take these drugs alone at home without any medical supervision. It also removed the requirement that prescribers report all complications from these drugs. And what is so critical about that is that these drugs have a much higher rate of complications than the old-fashioned, I would say, a type of abortion, which was surgical. So mm-hmm. now they want the pills. They want to be able to mail the pills directly to your home, no medical oversight. But the irony is the pills, by default, have a four times greater rate of complications. And we know from data from the United Kingdom, for example, the drug complications, and they're at least 5 to 10 times as many complications as were initially reported. So we know that the drugs are actually, by default, more dangerous for women. But yet the FDA continues to reduce or eliminate those safety standards. And that's the Biden administration rolling back those safety standards. When I talk about this, I say, follow the money. Mm-hmm. The abortion industry right. makes a lot of money on pills. So it was disappointing that the Supreme Court brought an end to it was doctors that challenged the FDA's approval, that they were challenging this, saying this is unhealthy and unsafe for women. But unfortunately, the Supreme Court found that they did not have standing to bring the case. So the good news is that the court did not rule on the drugs or not the drugs. They ruled on a technicality that the doctors didn't have standing. Meanwhile, some other parts of the case continue, and we're very hopeful that this will get back to the courts in due time, because women and girls need to be protected from this.
Absolutely. And when you're talking about standing, it is kind of interesting when you look at it, because I've heard some different things, read some things about that, because you hear this term, you need to have standing or lack of standing. They get refuse of cases because of lack of standing. And I guess one of the things with standing is you have to show that there's harm. That you receive harm or potentially going to receive harm. And I guess that's one of the things that they said, which somebody said was kind of a silver lining, because the court ruled that, or I shouldn't say ruled, the court said that pro-life doctors are protected by federal conscience protections, and that was one of the reasons they said they couldn't have standing, which is kind of interesting, because I remember reading some of this, who would it be to represent the Biden administration and their arguments in the lower courts? They said that those protections didn't apply in emergency situations, but when they got to the Supreme Court, they told the Supreme Court that they do apply in emergency situations. And so that's why the Supreme Court didn't find standing part of it there. So I guess if we want to look for the silver lining in there, there's a recognition from the Supreme Court that the federal law fully protects doctors against being required to provide abortions mm-hmm. or other medical treatment against mm-hmm. their consciences. So trying to find something good there. But
there's a bit of an irony here, because for many, many years under Roe, mm-hmm. it's been this a long time, Planned Parenthood would bring a case, or the ACLU would bring a case against a good pro-life law. They were always against them.
Right.
And they were rarely told that they didn't have standing. Now we're told that we don't have standing. But yet, in this particular arena with abortion, you just don't see, a lot of women don't come forward. There's a lot right. of shame, or they don't want people to know, or whatever. And so these are doctors that brought the case on behalf of their patients, basically, because mm-hmm. women wouldn't come forward. We have a doctor on our, Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, has a research and education arm called the Charlotte Lozier Institute. We have a lot of medical experts. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of physicians, people who do the research, look at the medical literature. And Dr. Ingrid Skop is on our team, and she was saying the other day that she's expecting to see and has been seeing more women that need blood transfusions, emergency surgery, and other things. But the idea that that the FDA would remove the, like, in-person, you know, you have to see a doctor requirement. She was, Dr. Scott was saying, when treating a suspected miscarriage, you would never send drugs through the mail without an in-person visit.
Right.
If you don't have an ultrasound, you can't confirm if the baby is alive. You can't confirm how old the baby is. So these drugs are only supposed to be used in the first trimester. And if something goes wrong, then about 8% of women are going to that take these pills are going to require surgery. But if that accidentally is used in the second trimester, 39% of women will have complications that require surgery.
Well, so I was going to say, it just seems common sense that you would want there to be some in-person visit with a medical professional with something that dangerous.
Yeah, 1 in 25 are going to take these pills. 1 in 25 women will end up in the ER. And then the abortion lobby just gaslights women about the risks and seeks to block states. They don't even want states to collect safety data and statistics on these things, which we continue to wrestle with the FDA about. And then some states even have shield laws that protect the abortion doctors from being held responsible if the women are injured. I mean, it's a mess out there. It's just a battle, as you know. It's a battle. It's a battle for the hearts and minds of women and for their lives or their children. But in the public square, it's just a battle for integrity and responsibility and accountability. And so while this is a setback, we'll keep going. There are pro-life states of Idaho, Kansas, and Missouri have another case. Mm-hmm. And they want to take up this challenge now on behalf of the women in their state. So we stand with them in AGs in Idaho, Kansas, and Missouri. Hopefully that'll be the next leg of the case.
Right, and that brings up a very good point, because I believe there were three states, Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, that had weighed in at least a little bit on this current one that the Supreme Court ruled on. What do you think about states in terms of standing? I would think that a state would have an easier time of proving standing, because the states are certainly affected. It's the citizens of the state that they're affecting.
That's exactly right. And this other suit that I was mentioning, attorneys general, is how you say that, plural, Labrador, Kobach, and Bailey, they are asserting that they have standing, the states have standing, because, well, one, the women are from their states, but also, two, their states have some skin in the game when these women end up in the emergency room, and maybe they're on Medicaid, or the state is ultimately paying something for their care to help fix them, get them well.
Right.
And so it's costing states money. Like in Missouri, they don't have abortion anymore, but the women go across state lines to Illinois or another state, get their abortions, come home, and then this large percentage of them end up in the emergency room. And for a lot of them, Missouri pays for that. And so that's what they're asserting, is that our states do have standing, and we do have a stake in, you know, keeping our women from these dangers.
Well, like you said, they have to pay and take care of these women going into the emergency rooms and things. So that would be injury to the state. And I was just thinking on the other parts with standing, they've got to show that the court decision can address the issue, which certainly would in this case if we had a favorable court.
It would. And if these women were to, if it to be required that they had a doctor again and had medical oversight of their care, they may not end up in the emergency room either. And so that's the whole crux of the issue, is getting that medical oversight requirement.
Right. Now, when you think about the abortion pill, the idea that these are being sent out, and a lot of people are probably thinking, well, you know, there's a few, and yes, they might have some trouble But this isn't all the abortions are taken. This isn't most of them. But what would be the statistics on the abortion kill pills today versus going into, like somebody used to go into, like Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, right. I don't have the exact number, but it is something like 62-63% of all abortions today are from the pills.
Wow.
And not going physically, going to an abortion clinic or a medical facility of some sort and having the surgical abortion anymore. One of the reasons for that is because you can, first of all, it's not as expensive. You don't have to rent a surgical suite, get, you know, if they have some anesthesia or sterilize instruments, things like that. So you don't have all of that, but you also can mark up the cost of pills. The markup on that is, I don't know, I think the last statistic I saw was something like 300%. So the money to be made on the drugs, you can also just ship them easily, cheaply through the mail. And it also intuitively seems to women that it would just be so much easier to take a pill or two.
Right.
And that's really the irony here, is that the pills are more dangerous and are going to hurt her worse. Women can get sicker faster, I think I mentioned that, by taking the pills than the surgery. Here's another irony. The old talking point that abortion is a choice between a woman and her doctor. Well, that's just a lie, because they're pushing these drugs without having any sort of medical oversight. So there's no doctor involved. If Planned Parenthood had its way, ACLU, others, there'll be no doctor. We'll just mail you the pill. And so it's not between herself and her doctor. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Women are getting into trouble. They're facing even life-threatening issues because there is no medical oversight.
Well, let me pose a hypothetical to you. And we look at what's happening. I know school's out right now and summer break and all that. But during school, let's assume we're back in the school year, and a high school girl finds that she's pregnant. And she decides that she doesn't want to tell anybody. And she doesn't want to, she's afraid to go to a clinic or something, afraid somebody will see or something like that. How easy would it be for her to get this pill under the current situation today? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I do. It's way too easy for her to get the pills. In fact, they send advertisements to her phone. We've had several situations where people have, we've tried to get the drugs. You know, I haven't done it, but I know people have just gone online. Maybe it's one of my colleagues or someone who's a male and just says online, I'm a female, I'm 18. They're not checking these things. And so those pills can get just mailed to her, directly, or maybe she can have it mailed to a friend's house so that her parents don't see the mail. Another thing we say a lot is that the college dorm bathroom has become the new abortion clinic.
Yeah, I can see that.
Getting the drugs. The other problem, in addition to no medical oversight, is let's say there your teenage girl there. She gets her drugs. She takes the pills. When she does, unfortunately, pass her child, she's usually in the bathroom alone, and they tell her that this is, it's not really, I mean, it may hurt a little bit. It's probably like a really tough period. You're going to bleed a little bit more. You're going to have cramping a little bit more. That is not at all what women tell us that they experience. They experience heavy, they think they're going to bleed out. They think they're going to pass out. Their pain is indescribable, not at all what they told them it would be. And here she is alone in her bathroom. And then, unfortunately, she often will see her child come out.
Wow.
We have heard women talk about the nightmare that and the image they can't get out of their minds now. For seeing that. I don't know what they thought they were going to see, but unfortunately they're seeing an image that they never really thought they would. And then we know that there is some trauma involved in even going back in that bathroom, cleaning up the bathroom so mom and dad I mean, there's blood everywhere. I mean, this is not a pretty sight, okay? This is dangerous. It's painful and it's traumatic for, especially for young girls. But we hear this over and over from women who have taken these drugs and then have had the trauma and the shock of seeing the outcome in their own bathrooms. And it's just, it's heartbreaking at that point. I know that, like me, that you are, you and your listeners are not for abortion, or you don't want to see women go through that. But we also need to know, our hearts need to break at the experience that these women are having with these pills. It's a whole separate type of outcome than even a surgical abortion years ago, you know, when I was growing up. And so there are lots of aspects of these drugs, not to mention, of course, the threat to her health, but also the threat to her mental health. The other thing about these drugs, I just want to be sure to put this on the table. If they're ripe for coercion, a boyfriend could force her to take them. There have already been cases where men have put them in the a girl's drink. And there's a case in Louisiana where a husband actually put it in his wife's drink. And Louisiana just passed a law to try to stop that. So the traffickers, sex traffickers, we've heard that these drugs come across the border in duffel bags down at the Texas border with the sex trafficking. And it's just, women are at risk. One more thing. I know I feel like I'm rambling. I'm sorry. But
that's all right. We are coming up on the last few minutes, but no, this has been good.
England did a test and they took it down. They did a test for mail order and they were so concerned about women being coerced and forced that they recommended they stop the program.
Well, Sue Leibel, I want to thank you for talking about this and letting our listeners know about this. And we got about 2.5 minutes. If you could maybe give our listeners something that they can do. I know we need to pray. That's obvious. And I know people are praying about this. But is there anything particular that might be a help that people can do if they feel moved by the Lord to take action?
Yeah, I have a couple things that come to my mind. And that is to talk to your local officials. States still have some broad latitude in how they regulate healthcare. And so the boards of a board of pharmacy member that you may know, or your local city councilman or legislator to try to put some regulations around these drugs at the state level. Also, I'd like to suggest that you talk to your doctor, your people that you know in the medical community. Unfortunately, some folks in the medical community are pretty woke, and they don't see anything wrong with this, and it's shameful. So talk to your medical folks, and also, like you said, be praying, but be praying that the schemes of the enemy will be revealed, that this case will find its way back into the courts, and that it'll be, the truth will come out, and that the FDA will do its job.
Absolutely. And what is the website that people can go to for more information?
Absolutely. It's sbaprolife.org. So Susan B. Anthony, but sbaprolife.org.
And there's a wealth of information there, too, as well, right?
So. Yes, we have a lot of information. You can sign up for our alert to get the latest information about these cases and other things. You'll see the latest in pro-life policy, but also we do an awful lot with services for women, our pregnancy care center, our crisis pregnancy centers, expansion of child care, medical care for pregnant women, things that will help her make a decision for life.
Oh, very good. Sue Leibel, I want to thank you for being on with us and providing the information, and I want to encourage people to pray for you and the work that you're doing and the work that Susan B. Anthony organization is doing as well for the pro-life cause. And appreciate you being on with us today. Thank you so much, and God bless you. We'll keep praying for you, and stay in the fight there. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless.
You've been listening to Live with Pastor Al. To learn more about Pastor Al Davis and Live with Pastor Al, visit our website at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. You can also listen to past programs at livewithpastoral.com. Read articles on a variety of topics by Pastor Al at livewithpastoral.com. Pastor Al Davis invites you to join him at the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio, Sunday morning at 11 or Sunday evening at 6. Or you can join us for our Friday night Bible study tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. The Bible Baptist Church meets at 4174 Wheatley Road, Suite 200 in Richfield every Sunday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m., and then every Friday at 7. You can contact Pastor Al by writing Pastor Al Davis at Post Office Box 452, Richfield, Ohio 44286. Or you can email Pastor Al at pastoral@maplenoel.us. Join us for more live conversation this Sunday night from 10 to midnight. And again, next Friday afternoon from 1:30 to 2, right here on AM 1220, The Word. Late Night Live with Pastor Al is brought to you by the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio.